Fairy tales have a moral, urban legends a warning, and crime has a cause and effect. Join us as we explore the origins obscura of the crying boy.
Hey, honey, tell me a story.
Okay. So today we have the crying boy.
I'm not even going to guess why he's crying yet because I don't want to jump ahead.
Yeah, the story has four parts, so stay in your lane.
Okay, I will do my absolute best.
Okay, so for the backstory, the crying boy was a painting by an... Okay, I'm going to murder these names because I am a German-Norwegian and these names are not in my wheelhouse. They have too many vowels. Sorry, I'm so very sorry. The crying boy is a painting by Giovanni Bragolin, which is a pen name of the Spanish painter Bruno Amadio. How was that?
That was pretty good.
Okay. It was mass-produced and widely distributed from the 1950s onwards. As the story goes, the crying boy was a little street urchin that Amadio had found wandering around Barcelona sometime around 1969. He never spoke. He had a very sorrowful look in his eyes. And Amadio thought that he was compelling, I guess. So he painted the boy. He had to, you know, he's an artist. Well, a Catholic priest who had seen the painting of the crying boy told Amadio that the boy in the painting was a boy named Don Bonillo, a child who had run away after seeing his parents die in a fire. The priest told Amadio to have nothing to do with Don Bonillo, because wherever he went, fires of unknown origin would mysteriously break out. And the villagers called poor little orphan Don Bonillo Diablo because of this.
Sure, call a poor little kid who lost his parents in a fire the devil.
A child who apparently cries a lot because the painter had to paint a picture of him crying. But yes, let's call this poor orphan child the devil and turn our backs on him. The artist Amadio ignored the superstitious priest because, of course, you would. Like, you terrible, horrible human being.
I certainly would.
Amadio ignored the superstitious priest and he looked after the boy. The paintings of the little sad orphan made the artist fairly rich, but one day his studio mysteriously burnt to the ground.
Well, he didn't pay the kid.
Hey, you have to give the devil his due.
That's a good one.
Amadio was ruined, and in a rage, he accused little Don Bonillo of arson. The boy ran off crying and was never seen again.
Like, okay.
Every adult has failed this child. Jesus.
Yes. Like, except his, you know, his parents, you can't blame his parents. Yeah,
his parents are dead, but yes. Hey, your studio burns to the ground, and the first thing that you think of is, you started it.
Well, you know, the priest did warn him.
It was the 60s. He probably left his joint burning somewhere. After the fire, Amadio moved to Pada, Italy, where he spent the rest of his life working as an art restorer and producing the crying boy paintings for tourists until his death in 1981. At least 65 paintings were made of the crying boy under his pen name, Giovanni Bragolin, which were reproduced and sold worldwide. But the most popular reproduction was, and still is, the portrait of young Don Bonillo. Do you want to see the painting?
I do.
Okay. And if you are listening, I will post the images for this on our Instagram and our Facebook page so that you can see them too.
I think I know that kid.
You probably had it hanging on your wall when you were a child.
I think my grandmother did.
Yeah, they were apparently super popular in the 70s and 80s. And for those of you who can't see it, it's of a cute little kid, but he's crying. Like, they were hugely popular, but I don't know why you'd want that in your living room. Honestly, it's a crying child. Like,
I didn't understand any of the art my grandmother had hanging in the house.
Yeah, art was kind of wild back then.
Mm-hmm.
We had Jesus all over our house, so. As for the fate of the poor orphan boy, in 1976, a car on the outskirts of Barcelona exploded into a fireball after crashing into a wall. The driver was charred beyond recognition, but his driver's license in the glove compartment was only partly burned. The name on the license was one 19-year-old Don Bonilio. Could this have been the same Don Bonilio who had been the subject of the crying boy painting years earlier? We will probably never know, as no one ever came forward to claim the body.
This kid just got it on both ends.
Could not catch a break. Not at all.
No.
Now fast forward to the mid-80s. On September 4th, 1985, the British tabloid The Sun published a sensational story that most readers would have disregarded if it weren't for the incredibly respectable and reliable witness testimony that was quoted in it.
Okay.
In the story, Essex firefighter Peter Hall is quoted saying that fire brigades across the north of England had found examples of the same painting remaining untouched in fires whose causes remained unknown. The painting that he spoke of was Amadeo's rendering of Bonilio as the crying boy. Hall claimed that for years, firefighters had been warning their friends and loved ones not to hang a reproduction of the painting in their home because it was jinxed.
A cursed print.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reproductions of the paintings. In the interview, he even recounted the story of how he had warned his brother Ron about the curse. Ron, though, thought that it was ridiculous and deliberately bought a copy to prove him wrong.
Mm-hmm. I could see me doing that, yeah.
Shortly after he purchased the copy, Hall's home in Swallow Nest, Yorkshire, had a fire that gutted his kitchen and living room. When the portrait was removed from the living room wall, mostly intact, Ron Hall put his boot through it to destroy it. So you have a fire that takes out two rooms in your house completely, and yet the painting on the wall is just a little singed.
You realize at this moment in time, I am looking up where I could possibly buy this picture in bulk so I can send it to certain people all around the country.
You can still get them. They're harder to find than they were, but they are still available.
Does it count if I print it on my printer? There's really only one way to find out. Or am I jumping ahead?
Yeah, see, I know how the story ends, so.
Okay. I'll just continue to live here in my little dreamland about sending cursed portraits all over the place, and we'll talk about it later.
So now, that sounds pretty far-fetched, right?
It does.
You have experience, not necessarily recent experience, as a firefighter. Can you imagine telling somebody not to hang a picture in their house because it's cursed?
No, I'm not even as a firefighter, as a human being, I can't say, no, don't hang that in your house. It's cursed. I'd sound like a fragging lunatic.
It's jinxed.
It's, who's that dude from
fucking Spammers?
The Mummy 2 who walks around the whole first half of the movie. This tomb is cursed. This is cursed. Of course you're not going to believe
it. And now, for those of you who aren't familiar, The Sun is, it's a tabloid. It's like The Onion kind. Not The Onion. It's more like the National Enquirer, I guess.
But not quite as bad as the Weekly World News, yeah. Which, if you're listening, is one of my favorite magazines.
So it was a tabloid. It followed celebrities and things like that. In most of the articles that were in it, it could be taken with a grain of salt, right?
Because
they were more trying to sell than they were trying to, like, report legitimately.
It's a tabloid magazine. They survive on sensationalism.
Right.
They want you to get to buy the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about sales. Subsequent issues of The Sun, however, reported floods of calls after that initial publication. Readers reporting that they owned a copy of The Crying Boy and that strange things had happened. Dora Mann of Mitcham, Surrey's house was completely gutted by fire only 6 months after buying a reproduction of the crying boy. All of her paintings were destroyed except for the one of the little boy.
Hmm.
Sandra Krask of Kilburn, her sister-in-law and a friend, had all bought reproductions of the crying boy, and all of them had suffered fires soon after. Mrs. Krask had even seen the painting swing from side to side where it hung on the wall. So not only is the painting starting fires, there's some like paranormal activity happening there.
So reproductions are possessed.
Well, they did call the kid the devil. So wouldn't it stand to reason that his paintings would also be possessed, I guess?
I guess, but I'm a little skeptical.
Linda Fleming of Leeds and Jane McCutcheon from Nottingham both had fires where the crying boy survived unharmed. Jane Wyatt from the Isle of Wight heard about the jinx and tried to burn her two copies of The Crying Boy, but she reported to the Sun that they wouldn't catch fire. On the 9th of September that same year, both the Sun and the Daily Star reported that Grace Murray of Oxford was hospitalized at Stoke Mandeville with severe burns after a house fire, but her crying boy portrait was almost undamaged. So as I'm researching this, and I don't know if you've picked up on this, all of these names come with locations,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was interesting because usually in an urban legend or a ghost story that's, you know, a folk tale, there's not this level of detail. Something that we talked about in the last episode, to make a story, you have to have the detail that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
This has so much detail. It appears they were actually writing in and naming themselves and giving their locations. They were serious. This happened to me because they're willing to put themselves out here. This is who I am. This is where I live. And if this was the paper making it up, I don't think it would have that much detail in the telling.
Well, it's possible. It is the Sun.
Oh, you think that they're just like pulling names out and attaching a location to it?
It could be, except you threw in the name of another newspaper in there.
Mm, yes, I did. And you caught it. And the Daily Mail, I think it was.
Yes.
The Daily Star. Yep. Both the Sun and the Daily Star. This Daily Star, though, is another tabloid.
Oh, okay.
On the same day, the Sun reported that Brian Parks of Knott's destroyed his copy of The Crying Boy after a fire hospitalized his wife and two children. And the painting was found undamaged on the blackened wall of his living room. The Sun, on the 21st of October of the same year, reported that the Porrio Pizza Palace in Great Yarmouth was destroyed by fire, but the crying boy was undamaged. So now this isn't just a person, too. This is a place. This is a public place. This is a place where you can go eat.
Yes, but it's also a restaurant that has ovens and fire and things like that.
But it had the painting of the crying boy, and it wasn't damaged in the fire.
Okay, so over the course of your research, you happen to find the original article in the Sun or anywhere in the papers that they published the charred or uncharred pictures, any pictures from the fire, anything like that?
Yes. Yeah. I never was able to access the Sun's archives to see their original reporting of it, but I did find a lot of supporting evidence in other newspapers, and several of them published pictures of the crying boy paintings, and there were several different variations of the crying boy that were represented as being cursed.
All of them, I would suppose. I mean, if the boy's El Diablo, then any portrait would be cursed.
Except for some of these portraits are crying girls as well.
So the original artist took some liberties.
The original artist painted both crying boys and crying girls. And all of them were believed to be cursed.
Maybe it's the artist who's the curse.
Maybe. By now, local papers were also picking up the curse of the crying boy. And that's mostly what I found in my research. And again, this will be I'll put up several representations of this on our Facebook and our Instagram for you to look at if you're curious. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, I will have it in the video. The Shropshire Star published on the 26th of October, 1985, that Fred Trower's home in Telford was damaged by fire. However, Mr. Trower, an ex-fireman, refused to believe the crying boy curse, and he kept his portrait in the hallway where it would remain unless, he said, there was a second fire. Yeah, and I did find a lot of articles that were similar to that where people were like, this curse is complete crap. Found a couple where people were collecting the crying boy portraits that other people were throwing away. Mm-hmm. So there were people who were absolutely like, this is complete rubbish. I don't believe it. I will take all of your pictures of tiny children in misery and hang them throughout my home. So, yeah. So not everybody was like.
It wasn't a panic. It was, you know, they weren't gathering on home plate in Shea Stadium, setting all the disco albums on fire. Whoops. Sorry.
Spoke too soon. On Halloween in 1985, in a follow-up report, the Sun published the news that thousands of the crying boys were to be burned under supervision of the fire brigade. But the warehouse where the paintings were being kept had suffered a fire, which in turn destroyed the paintings. So
I thought the paintings were fireproof.
Two birds with one stone. I don't know. Okay. Actually, though, I did find out in my research that last bit was not actually true. That as the legend has become a thing, and I'm telling you real time this time, as the legend has become a thing, that like little extra bit was added in. But like you pointed out, it doesn't make sense, right? Because they're supposed to basically not burn. That's like the scary thing is it burns your house down, but the painting doesn't burn.
Mm-hmm.
So then the fact that they were in this warehouse waiting to be burned and it burned down and they were all destroyed doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If you're going to build a mythology, you need to stay within the rules of that world.
Yeah. But that was, as I was doing the initial research into the legend, that was in the lore on a lot of the like sites that cover like, you know, legend, urban legend type stuff, was that the warehouse where they had been in had burnt down. So I did want to include it, but yes, I'm letting you know right now that is not actually true.
No, that's good. Last time you messed with me for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, but it was so much fun. Other reports during the period included one from security guard Paul Collier, who threw his two crying boy prints into a bonfire, but after an hour, they were not even scorched. So many more stories. So what I've covered here is probably about half of what I found in some of the bullet point accounts of the timeline of this legend, I guess. It's, you know, I want to say legend, but it's not a legend. This happened. This actually happened. These paintings were being hung in people's homes. These homes were burning down, and in a lot of cases, the paintings survived. So it's not so much a legend, but what grew out of it is a legend.
If you were telling me that this was only in the Star, I'd go, yeah, right. But when legitimate news outlets in the area, so I'm going to imagine that the Shropshire Star is a, you know, little local newspaper just for Shropshire. But they would have been there, they would have seen some of this and reported it with way less of an angle than the Sun would.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. So what I just covered was probably about half of the bullet points that are available, you know, out there on like the wikis on this legend and stuff. I, in doing some research into newspaper coverage of the day, found an additional 28 articles
From legitimate news
sources. From legitimate news sources, because the Sun is not covered in my service that I use for this. So these are from the Surrey Mirror, The Guardian, the Western Daily Press, the Liverpool Echo, the Lincolnshire Echo, Birmingham Evening Mail, Cambridge Evening News. So these are legitimate news sources. And these clippings, again, I'm going to put up on our social media sites so that you can take a look at them. So,
yes, by all means, play along.
You know, I want people to play along. This podcast, I don't want it to be just our echo chamber. This is a study of lore and culture and belief, but also skepticism, because I love a good spooky story and I want them in my heart and soul to be real.
We'll find one.
But they rarely are. So it's an exercise in not just believing something for the sake of believing it. But it can still be fun and spooky. And so, yes, I absolutely do want people to chime in what they believe, what their thoughts are on the hows and the whys of these stories. So on to the problems, though. This is part three.
Okay, yes. Good.
So this is the debunking. So I've told you the backstory and then the legend itself, and now this is the debunking. That's probably going to be a theme with how most of these go.
Okay.
So it's going to be the problems with the legend, and then we'll go into the whys of it. So the problems. The lore says the artist found the crying boy in Madrid, but while the artist was of Spanish descent, he didn't paint in Spain. He trained and worked in Venice and then later Pada, Italy. I considered changing the backstory to make it work, but in the beginning, because I was like, this doesn't work. We've got these Italian names and these Spanish names. And if you like look at the artist's Wikipedia, he wasn't an artist in Spain. He never had a studio in Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you know, that he found this little boy in Barcelona, it doesn't make sense. As soon as you start looking into the backstory, it falls apart completely because it doesn't make sense. But
mean he never had a studio that burned down in Barcelona?
No, he never had a studio in Barcelona. He never painted in Barcelona.
Hmm.
He was trained in Venice. He spent a lot of his career painting in Venice, and he was doing that. He was painting the crying boys for tourists. But he then moved to Pada, Italy, where he became an art restorer and still painted a little bit. But yeah, never painted in Spain. As far as my research told me, I could be wrong if you know more about this, but from where we're going to go from here, I think your guess is going to be as good as mine. The years in the story, that original backstory, don't make sense. They're not quite right. If Don Benilio was 19 in 1976, then he was 12 in 1969 when the artist plucked him off the streets. Now I'm gonna scroll again because again you guys can look at this on social media.
He's what,
is that a 12-year-old? Yeah, right. I would even peg him as being younger. Like that almost looks like a toddler to me, but that's not a 12-year-old. And yeah. Now all
and
of
also,
these
just like, pipe in there for a second. Looking at the picture, it also doesn't look like the late 60s.
Yeah. And all of these paintings, because they're all of different boys or different versions, none of them look like they're 12. So that doesn't make sense either, the years that they have for this. And now some skeptics say that artist doesn't actually exist and is a combination of at least five or more different artists. However, the art community does actually believe that Bruno Amadio was an artist in Italy that painted crying boy paintings, that he worked under 3 to 5 pseudonyms, and according to Wikipedia, was tracked down in Pada, Italy in the 70s. However, there is a note that citation is needed for that in the Wikipedia article. But I did see an interview with an art curator talking about the Crying Boy paintings, and he did believe that Bruno Amadio was an actual artist who painted some of these Crying Boy paintings. There are at least 65 different crying children paintings, including boys and girls. At least 5 different ones are attributed to the curse, but one of those that is attributed to the curse is not by Bruno Amadio. It is by a Scottish artist named Anna Zinkhuizen.
That's a very proper Scottish name.
So that's a completely different artist, but her painting is still cursed.
Well, do you have a copy of that picture?
I do not. I'm not sure. I'm not sure which one of these is hers.
I was wondering if she was riffing off of the original.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe somebody else can find it. Maybe somebody has it hanging in their house.
You know, I'll look for it. And if after the fact I find something about it, we could actually like put in a thing at the beginning of the next one where I'm like, hey, I found it or whatever. So if there isn't one of those things, then you know I didn't find it. The only thing that the different cursed prints had in common was that they were cheap, mass-produced paintings sold by department stores in the 60s and 70s. The provided backstory on the curse was actually from research that was attributed to a man named George Mallory of Devon, who was a retired schoolmaster and a researcher into the occult. Except that no one can actually confirm that George Mallory existed any more than they can prove Don Bonillo did. So the backstory is it doesn't make a lot of sense. The person who supposedly researched and found this information likely doesn't exist. The warehouse where the paintings were kept did not burn. See, I was going to tell you. Yeah. According to the Sun, that embellishment was added to the story years after the Sun had actually stopped covering the Crying Boy paintings. The fires attributed to the curse that were reported to have no explanations were, in fact, investigated by the fire departments at the time and mostly were found to be started by cigarettes, overheated deep fryers, and faulty electric heaters or appliances. So after a fire, you have that initial article that hits the paper, and they're like, we don't know.
Yeah.
Because they don't. It hasn't been investigated. They never went back afterwards and said, oh, it was actually because somebody forgot to put out their cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody left their electric heater on too close to their bed or anything like that. So the fires did not have explanations. They weren't unexplainable. They just weren't explained in the initial articles. Are you ready for the big reveal?
I am.
Because this is true. This happened. There were these paintings. They were in people's houses. The houses had fires, although not unexplained fires. And the paintings survived, mostly intact, with a little bit of singeing. Do you have any guesses?
Were they made of asbestos?
No.
Okay.
You're close, though.
Okay.
In 2011, British comedian and radio host Stephen Punt investigated the curse of the Crying Boy paintings for his show Punt PI. He managed to track down one of the eyewitnesses from the Sun's coverage back in the 80s, Jane McCutcheon. In his interview with her, she confirmed that she did own the painting and she had a massive fire in her living room where the portrait had hung, but it was left undamaged. She also hinted at further torment from the specter in the painting that occurred after the fire, though she didn't want to talk about those troubles on air. So little sketchy in the ending there. But I did go back, and when I listened to Stephen Punt's coverage of it, I went back, and yes, we have a Jane McCutcheon in the list that I recounted from the Sun, and it was Linda Fleming of Leeds and Jane McCutcheon from Nottingham. Both had fires where the crying boy survived unharmed. So this was in the earlier portion of this happening, like it was in, yeah, the September of 85. That was one of the first reports that was made. So she confirmed when he found her years, like literal years later. This was in 2011, so almost 30 years after.
Mm-hmm.
He also spoke to the editor of the Sun at the time, who possibly jokingly refused to have the painting in his house. So Stephen Punt was walking around England with this painting of the crying boy.
Oh, that had to be funny to watch.
And he, it's a radio program, mm-hmm. so there's no images of it, but it sounded pretty hilarious. So he shows up to the editor's house with this painting, and the editor was like, no, it doesn't come in. And listening to it, he was laughing, so he was joking, but he was also very adamant that it was not to come in his house.
Yeah.
And at one point during the interview, the doorbell rang, and he was like, somebody is ringing my doorbell to tell me my porch is on fire. Because
yeah.
He made it Punt leave it on the porch. So it felt like he believed this.
Or at least didn't want to tempt bait.
Yeah. And Punt spoke about how traveling with the painting made him feel uneasy. It was clear that he didn't really believe in the myth, and he was kind of like making a joke about it, but he still felt strange having it in his possession. This is worth mentioning to me because it forms a basis of how our brains will process this lore. You know, even being skeptical, there can often be pervasive thoughts that kind of just pull you into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said earlier, I want one of these to be true. So our brains can easily be like, no, this is it. This is the one. We want to believe in magic. We're hardwired to believe in magic.
Even now, just to where that unconscious piece comes in. If I pass a mirror late at night in the dark, I don't look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. At the conclusion of his broadcast, he took the painting to a fire investigator where they tried, through controlled methods, to set the painting on fire. They were somewhat unsuccessful. The footage of this is actually available on YouTube for anybody who wants to see it for themselves. But while the painting did burn a little bit, it burnt through in a spot where the flame was directly applied to it, it never actually caught fire completely. And it left the face of the boy in the painting largely intact. The hypothesis from the investigator was that a fire retardant varnish had been applied to the front of the painting. What did everybody love to cover everything with in the 70s and 80s?
Scotchgard.
Fire retardants, Scotchgards, protect it, protect everything.
Yeah.
Did you have one of the fire retardant Halloween costumes from the 70s?
Oh, I hated those damn things.
That were like that heavy plastic. And sure, they wouldn't start on fire, but they were going to melt into your skin.
Yep.
Yes. So it was covered with a fire retardant.
I'd almost be willing to bet that the guy who did the original like boardwalk style paintings, if he's painting that live, it's going to be wet when he hands it off. Probably use a coat of something to quick dry.
They thought it was a fire retardant varnish, like the last finish that you would put on it.
Yeah.
Probably had a fire retardant in it. So he also tested the string that the painting hung on and found that it burned really rapidly. And he thought that if the painting was hung on the wall and there was a fire, the string would burn through and it would cause the painting to fall probably face down, right? It would slide down the wall and then
flop over
onto the face. In between that face down position and the fire retardant likely applied to the front surface, it could survive even a large house fire, mostly unscathed.
That makes absolute logical sense.
Right? Yeah, when you think about it, it's so easy. It's such a logical, especially knowing that time period from like the 50s to the late 80s, everything was covered in fire protectants and Scotch guards and all of those chemicals, because chemicals led to better living. Like, everybody was obsessed mm-hmm. with them at the time.
Better living through modern chemistry.
But, you know, caught up in the mania of the lore, nobody really went there. And in the articles that I clipped, there's even firefighters other than the firefighter who did the initial interview with the Sun, who say, yeah, you know, I don't necessarily believe in this curse, but we do find these things a lot, and it's really weird.
Yeah, well, being a former firefighter, I can say every firefighter I personally know is superstitious.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if you believe it or not. It's like the editor from the Sun. I don't necessarily believe it, but I'm not going to push my luck.
Mm-hmm.
It's why if you go into a firehouse, if they have the horseshoe for luck, it is facing in the proper direction.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, firefighters are superstitious. That does not surprise me. The fact that nobody thought that it was Scotch guarded, okay, this might be a little bit cynical, but saying that you Scotch guarded your pitcher isn't going to get you interviewed in the newspaper.
I don't even think that was a pervasive thought. It's also not Scotch guarding. Scotch guarding waterproofed the furniture. It's something else. Scotch guard was a stain resistance for fabrics.
Yeah, but I can only say fire retardant so many times.
Hey, I don't even think that was it. I think that they wanted it to be something supernatural. And here, let's step into the whys of this, because I have a hypothesis on what I think was going on. And it kind of goes back to when Mr. Punt was feeling uneasy traveling with the painting, in our brains just kind of being hardwired for that. So imagine that you're reading your favorite rag mag in the 80s, The Sun, and you come across an article written about a cursed painting, only to lift your eyes to see the crying boy staring at you from across the room in its place of pride on your living room wall.
And your first thought is, oh, shit.
Right. Even if you believe it's crap, if something happens to you amidst all of these stories that you're seeing in the Sun, and now you're seeing them in your local paper, your brain is going to go back to the sad eyes of that painting, and you're going to start to wonder if maybe there is some truth. As humans, through ages of society pushing us to believe in religion and myth as a social control, we're hardwired to believe in things we can't see. So why not a curse? I mean, from infancy, we're taught to believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny. And whether or not you're religious, that is still believing in a concept that we can't see, feel, or touch. And all of these things, whether real or not real, it's all based on faith. It's used as a way to control our behavior, to get us to work in society together and not kill each other with rocks. It's how we come together as people. And so you have to teach your babies from a young age to have faith in things they cannot see. So mm-hmm. we want to believe. And the Sun editor said that the first story was just funny and kind of intriguing, but he didn't expect it to take off like it did. They kept publishing the stories because the issues with stories about the crying boy in them sold like wildfire. And then other tabloids got into it, like the Daily Mail, and eventually the local reputable newspapers started covering it because it had become so pervasive in the culture at the time, and it made money. And you said it earlier, that's what it comes down to. It's about, you know, bringing in the green, making the money.
I have a theory on how this actually started back from the beginning. Growing up on the East Coast, we would go down to Coney Island or down to Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have guys on the boardwalk painting pictures.
Right.
There was always a story. if they were, you know, if they were just painting a picture of something out of their brain, as opposed to, you know, drawing caricatures of you, there was always a story. I think Giovanni over there in Padua is painting pictures for tourists, and while he's painting, he's telling them this sad story so he can sell pictures
of a little orphan boy that he took in,
and he had a wonderful studio in Barcelona, and it burned to the ground.
That could very well
Those tourists took that story with the picture and brought it home.
It got so big, though, with the reproductions that were sold in department stores. There's a little bit of a disconnect there that my brain doesn't like. So how do you think that the story got from point A to point B, the people who actually purchased one from the artist on the streets of Venice to Joe Schmo, who bought it at Macy's for $3?
Somebody said, you know what I heard about that picture?
Huh?
Mm. It's either that or Ned's. I also have questions about how it got from Italy to England and why didn't any of the houses in Italy burn, but that's a story for another day.
It was the reproduction. Like you talked about him painting in Venice and covering it with a varnish, you know, before handing it off to the tourists. But these are all reproductions of the originals.
Oh, wait, I may have missed that at the beginning. I thought that at least one of these stories had one of the original pictures.
No, these are all reproductions that were sold in big department stores for just a few bucks at the time. And they were popular. They were hugely, hugely popular. They were popular in England. They were popular here in the States as well.
You know, what's interesting about that from a psychological point of view is I inserted my own narrative into there and believed it to be true.
Eh?
And the next person who I tell that story to
is going to click something in their head and work in their perception of it.
So now maybe we are adding to the legend of El Diablo.
Probably. So eventually the story on this got so big in the UK that the American papers started picking it up. And once again, a new audience was reading about a cursed object that they likely also had in their homes, because these paintings were hugely popular in Western culture at the time for some strange, likely sadistic reason. I still don't understand why people want pictures of a crying child on their wall. But okay, let's put that aside. Because this curse literally spanned continents. I believe that's what made it so enduring and why 25 years afterwards it was still being researched and investigated. Even now that it's been mostly debunked, you'll still see Reddit threads discussing it and creepypastas promoting it.
I want one.
I kind of do too, but I also don't, because it's a crying child. I want it for the campy cursed part, but I really don't want to stare at a crying child all day. Okay.
What if we find one and buy it and give it to the guy across the street over there?
See if it burns down his house.
Yeah, see if it burns down his house.
Urban legends tend to have a warning. And while this kind of falls into that urban legend land, it also doesn't. Because there's portions of it that are very real. Fairy tales typically have a moral. And I think that this falls kind of more into the moral realm than it does.
Is the moral don't paint pictures of little crying children?
No.
Okay.
No, this one, maybe it's moral, maybe it is a warning. But I think this story tells us that we need to look skeptically at things that the media reports. Lest you be caught up in the madness. These fires happened. The paintings made it through with minimal damage, yeah. And that's not because of a curse. It's because of the mid-century obsession with fire retardants. Instead of telling readers to be careful with the fire hazards in their home, they were shifting the blame to the painting. And as humans, we don't ever want to blame ourselves. Like, it's hard. Like, I know some of us are way better than others at being accountable for our actions and taking blame for our mistakes. But we don't want to, even then. If there's a reason to put that on something else, a magical cursed painting, then we absolutely want to do that. But in this case, if the news agencies reporting on this had been more responsible, they might not have sold as many magazines, but they might have saved the homes of some of their actual audience. So skepticism, they're a business. They're trying to sell, and you need to remember that.
And that right there is a moral that continues
and will for perpetuity.
Yes.
Everybody's always trying to sell you something. So take everything they say with a grain of salt. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's interesting. As you're starting to tell this story, I'm like, is this the basis for The Ring with the cursed videotape?
Yeah. Oh, it would have been so much better if the little boy crawled out of the painting.
Yes. And cried all over your living room floor. Now that's what you would need Scotchgard for.
Started touching stuff and it just spontaneously combusted.
Yeah. There are so many holes even in the original story that you could drive a bus through.
Mm.
But that's neither here nor there when it comes to that. But it was an interesting tale. I kind of got sucked into it. But then as I'm hearing the stories coming out of the UK, I'm like, it's Occam's razor. All things being equal, the simplest explanation is usually the most reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So my house is on fire. This picture is here. I have a lit cigarette in my fingers. What do you think actually set the fire? The haunted picture or the fact that you fell asleep with a lit cigarette?
Because everybody was smoking back then. There's one of the news articles. I didn't quote it in my listing, but it was an older man who was in bed. And if it doesn't mention it in the article, but if you read between the lines, you can absolutely tell he fell asleep with a lit cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And his bedroom was completely toasted and he was hospitalized or actually he might have been killed. I don't remember, but yeah.
But then as they're going through the summation, the actual moral of the story is learn how to take accountability for your own actions.
Mm-hmm.
Don't believe everything you read.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do have to throw in there that a picture of a crying child is not going to set your house on fire.
But it's also not a good look. Like, don't decorate with crying children.
Okay. I will take that under advisement.
My interior decorating tips for the day. And with that, I would like to thank my sources. First, I'd like to thank the Creepypasta Wiki at creepypasta.fandom.com for their article, The Crying Boy. And next, Wikipedia at wikipedia.org for The Crying Boy. And then Dragon Queen's Lair at messybeast.com for their post, The Crying Boy Curse Myth. And finally, BBC Radio 4 at bbc.co.uk for Stephen Punt's Punt PI Series 3, Episode 4, The Crying Boy. If you'd like to join the conversation and tell us your thoughts on the whys and the hows of The Crying Boy, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/origins.obscura or on YouTube at youtube.com/@originsobscura or find us on Instagram at instagram.com/origins.obscura. Or you can always drop us an email at originsobscura@gmail.com. That is originsobscura@gmail.com. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time when we explore the origins obscura of Taken by Bigfoot.
Bigfoot? I love Bigfoot.